Good afternoon and welcome to your own health and fitness talk show. I'm health integration specialist Lena Berman, and I'm here live with you every Tuesday at 2, talking to you about health care, talking to you about exercise trends, and taking your phone calls. Today's show is one of my monthly solo shows, and today I'll be dispelling myths about weight resistance training, or at least attempting to do so. I'll be opening up the phone lines for your participation somewhere around 2:40. The number, no matter what area code you're in, is 510-848-4425. Please wait until around 2:40 for that. And also a reminder for those of you who may want to get a tape of today's show, or if you need to get hold of me during the week, you can call me during normal business hours, and my number is 707-769-1458, and I'll give that number out again at the end of the show. You know, the reason I wanted to do this show is because I think, among other things, that people lose sight. I mean, I think one of the biggest myths about weight resistance training is that it's really intended for people who do peak performance athletics and not for, quote, normal people. In fact, weight resistance can be done really by anybody. It's really what we're talking about when we say weight resistance is anything that utilizes either a weight in your hand, or it can be elastic bands, or even some of the aqua aerobics classes are actually weight resistance in nature because they're pushing against resistance. And the real reason for doing this kind of exercise is that it is it's a very targeted exercise that requires an intensity of effort with a very short duration and a lot of rest between it. So one of the advantages to it is that it can be accomplished actually rather quickly, and when it's done accurately, it can be done without hurting a joint. It should be done so, if it's done, you know, with some degree of education, which is, you know, maybe why some people hesitate, is that it's a good idea to get a little bit of training, have somebody help you with this, because there's some accuracy involved in it. But you can get a lot done in a very short period of time with weight resistance, a very targeted exercise. And it's very good for rehabilitation, and it's also very good for people who are aging and are trying to retain bone mass and retain balance. And this is a very important issue for people as they age, as they lose their capacity for balance. Weight resistance really helps with this because you're managing a weight or a force, and you need to balance it, and you also need to balance your body. So it kind of, without you even realizing it over a period of time, builds this back in. We call this proprioception. So I'd like people, among other things, in terms of myths, getting rid of myths about weight resistance, I'd like to get over the myth that you only need to do this if you want to be able to kick sand in someone's face at the beach and impress people, or if you want to, you know, as someone said, isn't it the ultimate form of materialism, you know, because you're making yourself beautiful. Well, you know, it doesn't, I mean, that's nice if it works that way, that's great, but really, I think it's much more about having a body that functions, and if you're going to be alive and move around in the world, and you want to continue to do that through your whole life, no matter what kind of work you do, even particularly if you don't do very physical kind of stuff, or if you do physical kind of stuff, either way, you should train. And weight resistance training is a way of maintaining stability and muscle mass. And it's very effective, as I said, very effective and very targeted, very in and out, very quick, and very isolated kind of exercise in the sense of not requiring hours and hours of it. It's very targeted, as I said, very effective. So as I'm discussing the sort of famous myths about weight resistance training, let me, for those of you who are not acquainted with using weights as an exercise technique, remind you of some terms that I'll be using. When you perform weight resistance training, and this is sometimes based on something we call, this is always based on something we call the overload principle, which means that you are trying to really fatigue a muscle in a particular range of repetitions. So in one exercise, one term is exercise, it'll be an exercise. Like a famous exercise is bicep curls. It's the one you usually think of when you see bodybuilders lifting a weight from the sides of their bodies up to a little above their waist for their biceps, you know, the muscle that you always see someone flex, you know, they hold their arm and go, boom, that's your bicep. So you do that exercise would be a bicep curl, the repetitions are the number of times that you lift the weight up, right? And the number of sets are how many times you perform that exercise in those repetitions. So the overload principle is based on, believe it or not, science. There is a lot of scientific data around all of this. There are textbooks and there are studies done. And it's based on the idea that there is a certain ideal range of repetitions, and by the end of that range of repetitions, or there might be like a between 8 and 12 for the upper body, means that if you're lifting a weight that's too heavy for you to do 8 repetitions, the weight is too heavy, really, you know, ideally, unless you're pretty, it depends on how experienced you are, but for most people, 8. And then if you can perform 12 on your upper body, 12 repetitions, and it's easy for you to do that, it means you need to go up in weight. Because what you're really trying to do is get the muscle to fatigue, because that gives a signal to the body that the muscle needs to develop and become both have more stamina and also have more strength. So in the case of weight resistance exercising, failure is success. In other words, having your muscle fail or get tired is success, because that's what gets it to grow. And muscle growth, as you'll discover in these various myths that I'm going to try to dispel, doesn't mean that you end up looking like the, you know, Hulk character from cartoons. People's bodies are very different, and not everybody develops the same way, and you can control the amount of development, but you do need to work the muscle till it's extremely tired, even if you're just maintaining a certain level of development in the muscle. So that's one myth we can dispel right now, is that if you go in and you just do a certain number, you say, okay, 10, here I go, 1, 2, 3, 4, done. Well, if you didn't get real tired during that exercise, doing those repetitions, the muscle's not going to respond to that. So you're just kind of wasting your energy. And the real beauty of weight resistance is you don't have to do that. You can go in, get it done, and then you need a lot of rest to let it develop. So let's go down the list of these things. You know, I used, when I first started doing these shows, dispelling myths, I used originally an article that was published in Muscle Media 2000 in 1993. Now, Muscle Media 2000 is a magazine that if most of my listeners pick up that magazine, you will be offended by it, because it's done in the traditional bodybuilding style with the gigantic man who's been taking lots of performance-enhancing drugs on the front, with a back the size of Canada, with a woman with plastic-enhanced breasts and very skinny, you know, spaghetti arms in a bikini. And its language is sort of from the old school and stuff. But what I like about their magazine is that they're very honest, and they take on some hard topics like drugs and talk about drugs and what, you know, the harms and the things. And they also, but they also do lots of reviews of styles of exercise. And some of the information in there is really quite solid. So if you can get past, if you're interested in weight resistance training, particularly in bodybuilding, and you can get past the graphics and the language, and just read the articles, some of them are very good. So in 93, they did an article about the myths, and it was the thing that I used as a kind of jumping off point for this program that I've done a couple times, because it was a very good article. So I'm giving them credit, even though I'm warning you that if you pick up the magazine, you'll scream. So one of the first ones is that, as I said, only peak performance athletes lift weights. Well, you train, and training with weights is part of this, so that your body functions well, because life requires you to function well and not fall down. Another one is, if you want to have a toned look, like a dancer's body, then you train with light weights and you do high repetitions. Well, I'm sorry, guys, you know, it's just not true. I mean, the truth is, there's only one thing you can get a muscle to do, and that is to develop and grow. And growing a muscle is what makes you have a toned look. The real thing that makes people look toned or lean is losing body fat. And what happens when you lift weights is that the more muscle mass you have on your body, the faster your metabolism will go. And gradually, over a period of time, if you adjust your diet so that it's prudent and not full of sugar, and you're moving around enough to support the calories you're taking in, you will, by the nature of adding muscle to your body, lose body fat. And so your body ratio, your lean to fat ratio will change, your body composition will change, and you will look more toned. But really, people who have that kind of body are going to have that body mostly on the basis of genetics. So, you know, not even everybody who dances has a, quote, dancer's body, you know. the ones you see on stage do. And in fact, dancers do an enormous amount of aerobic exercise, and they work out more than most of us really should, because that's really requires a tremendous amount of devotion and energy, and not everybody can spend their lives dancing to that same. If you do, you are more likely to have that style of body. But anyway, the point is, we're talking mostly genetics here, not the number of times you lift a weight. And in fact, people who take you and put you in an aerobics class with weights and tell you that if you can run around holding weights and stuff, that you will in fact build muscle, are misleading you a little bit. You may notice some change just on the basis of increasing the load on your muscles, but that is not an effective way to do it. And really, bottom line is, if you go in and work your muscle to make it grow, that's really what you're trying to do. And while it is true that you can train specifically to get bigger, and you can also train without getting huge, depending on how much effort and time and energy you put into it and how you eat, yes, you can control it, but not by changing the amount of weight and the amount of repetitions. I will say, that said, that, you know, if you really have a mind to build and pack on muscle, you will lift heavier weights during that period. But it isn't true that doing high repetitions, lots and lots of repetitions, like doing 15 to 20 repetitions, is going to make your muscles leaner. Doesn't happen, I'm sorry. Okay, another one that sort of goes along with this is, you can spot reduce an area, like your stomach, you know, by working it. Never happens, not in your stomach, not anywhere else on your body. You don't spot reduce. Again, the only way you lose fat is by losing fat all over your body. And that again goes back to how much muscle you have in relationship to the other, you know, to the fat and the fluid on your body. And that's over a period of time, adjusting your diet somewhat. You don't have to make yourself nuts. You know, I'm not a low-fat advocate necessarily. I mean, I'm a lower fat, but not a non-fat. And protein to carbs and no sugar will help you to spot reduce that stomach. You know, the fat on your body is going to land wherever it lands genetically, and also depending on your sex and all the rest of it. So if that's where it's landing, is on your stomach, that's, you know, or on your hips, that's where it's landing, you can't spot reduce it. In fact, some of the silly little calisthenics that people do to try to spot reduce their inner thighs kind of put your hips and lower back at risk, and they may not accomplish what you're trying to do. You can build muscle, and you can lose fat as a result of changing your body composition. Another myth is, if you lift weights, you get too big and inflexible. How big and strong and flexible you are is, again, largely genetic. I mean, you can change your flexibility by stretching, but the truth is that weightlifting actually makes you more flexible, not less. When you lift a weight and make movements with a weight, you're training the muscles to move, and you are building in some flexibility as well as strength. In fact, getting too stretched out and too flexible, people who are kind of hypermobile, genetically, there are these people who can sit down, open their legs out straight from side to side, and then plop their chest on the floor. These people are a little bit hypermobile, and sometimes these people, if they don't do weight resistance training, actually get hurt more easily. But flexibility is genetic. You can improve it by stretching. Stretching is wonderful. It's very important to do while you exercise. But you don't get inflexible from lifting weights and building your muscles. You get more flexible. And it's, you know, a reminder that it's also a rare individual that gets bigger than they want to. It takes a tremendous effort to get big, really big. And it usually doesn't happen without you intending it to happen. And again, you know, women really don't have the levels of testosterone, most women don't, to get huge muscles. And yes, the pros do take performance and development enhancing drugs. They do. And the reason those work is that they protein spare. When you work out, you're not burning your own muscle tissue, so you can work out longer and harder than a normal person would when you take steroids. So they do work, but they cause some really bad side effects. Oh, I really can't recommend using them. For those of you who are just tuning in, this is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integration specialist Lena Berman, and I'm doing a show by myself this week on the myths about weight resistance training, and kind of going through them and trying to give you a reality check about them. Another myth is that the longer or the more you work out, the better it is, and the more you'll grow. Research shows over and over again that it's possible to completely fatigue a muscle in one set of weight resistance training, one set of an exercise. One, and traditional bodybuilders have always done four. If you do it right, if you do it carefully, you can do it in one set. I'm not saying everybody should do one set. I usually put people on two sets when I'm working with them. So you do what you need to do for you. People are different, you know, in terms of their capacity to recovery and stuff. So, but if you work that muscle accurately, it can take several days for it to heal. You know, you're actually one of the things that happens in a muscle when you weight train, and don't freak out when I say this because it's not dangerous. It's the same thing that happens if you work outside or do anything with your body, is that you get these little micro tears. But that's what encourages the muscle to grow. That's what tells the body that it needs to build that muscle stronger. And that's what keeps you lively and strong. But if you overdo it, you know, these guys that used to come out of the gym going, man, I can hardly walk. I'm really worked out so hard. You know, I really ripped myself up. That's not necessarily a good idea, because if you're that sore, it means that you really should take a long time to heal before you go back in and work on the muscle some more, because the muscle just can't respond if it doesn't have enough rest. So, you know, for some people, it may take, you know, when people work out with weights, even if you don't work the same muscle every day, but you go in the gym every day, that may still be too much a weight training, and you can still become overtrained. Sometimes it's a good idea to sort of alternate days doing something like an endurance exercise, like walking or running or swimming or something, with your weights, and not do weights every day. Even, again, obviously don't work the same muscle every day anyway. It just, if you think about it, your muscles need a couple of days of rest if you worked them well. So you can work different muscle parts 2 days in a row, but even that, some of the pros think that now that it's better not to go to the gym every day, even switching up the parts that you work. And most pros, most professional athletes, usually say that the biggest problem they ever had was overtraining. Remember that if you train too hard and the body becomes overtrained, it won't develop and it will reverse all the good benefits of training. You know, you won't build muscle, you'll burn muscle, you won't burn fat as fuel, you won't raise your metabolism, everything will go backwards. The right amount of exercise does wonderful things, boosts your immunity. Too much depresses your immunity, so not to overdo. Another good myth to get rid of is that you must do a complete range of motion to work a muscle group, that you need to move your limb in the full range that it goes in order to get good development. That's fine if you don't have a weight with you or you're not pushing against a weight. That's fine. You can move your arms any way you want to. Hopefully, you always hope that when people do any kind of physical culture that they learn some basics about stabilizing the core of your body. If you watch dancers move, they never throw their arms out to their sides without pulling in toward the center of their body, pulling their shoulders back and down and pulling into the center of their body so that they have better balance and that they're not injuring areas. That's called a sort of core strength, and that's something that people hopefully will teach you if you try to learn weights. But what I'm talking about is when you pick up a weight and you're doing some range of motion, some movement, a full range of motion is not necessary if you're just, because you may put your limb, your joint rather, at risk going full range with weight in your hand. And to get the muscle to contract and to work, you don't need to do a full range of motion. You need to make the range of motion that the muscle will fire in or contract in. And that's enough to get it to grow or to develop. And in many cases, when you do a less full range of motion, where you're starting the movement at approximately 90 degrees and not making full range. Now, this is going to vary from exercise to exercise, and I'm making a general comment here. And if you have specific questions, you can call me and ask me when I open up the phone lines. But what I'm saying is that starting at 90 degrees and in some cases not going full range with weights in your hand will put more intensity, will work the muscle harder because there's no rest period in there. And you'll get in and out, make the muscle grow without putting your joint at risk. And one of the goals, I think, of weight resistance training is being able to do it well into your life, you know, until you're not alive. I mean, I think the goal is to do it to do it your full life, to be able to do it continuously your full life. And that means that you want to maintain joint health, and that is best accomplished by not going full range of motion. So you don't need to go full range of motion to work a muscle group. Another myth is that women need to train differently than men. Well, but you know what? Guess what? If you take the skin, forgive me for being a little biological here, but if you look at a body without skin, we look the same. We have the same muscle groups and things there. It's nothing really different. The main difference between men and women is that men tend, not always, but tend to be slightly larger than women. Sometimes their hearts are a little larger, and sometimes the ratio of muscle to fat or muscle to body weight is larger. But if you compare people who are the same size and have roughly the same lean body mass, so that would mean, I'm a little bit under 5'5". I'm about 5'4.5". So if I were to be matched against a man who is 5'4.5", who has been exercising and I've been exercising, and we have roughly the same ratio of muscle on our body to fat, if we have similar ratios, and then you compare us in strength, the similarities are less, are more, the similarity is more than there is difference. Men will tend to be a slightly stronger in their upper body, and that will also depend somewhat on genetics and hormonal makeup of the woman. But the average woman will not be as strong as the average man of the same lean body mass on the upper body. But the legs, boy, real close. And I think women who work out notice that their legs are sometimes even stronger than some men's. Clearly, a woman who lifts weights can easily be stronger than a man who does not. So that myth needs to go. You know, we don't need to train differently. It's really just a question of how you, you know, people should, my opinion is people should not train according to how they want to look as much as they should train according to how they want their bodies to function. You know, so if what you want to be able to do is accomplish a certain kind of task, or you have a lifestyle and you want to, or you just want to stay lean and healthy looking and look fit, that may be the way you want to function too, instead of taking a magazine picture and saying, I want to look like this. Because that person's genetics may be really markedly different from yours. And while you can maximize your own genetics and really do surprising things, people can sculpt their bodies to some extent, I still think the goal of exercise should be to maintain and to improve function in the body. Okay, the other myth is, another thing I should mention about women and men is, men do have, as I said before, they tend to have more testosterone. We know that. We tend to have more estrogen. Now, estrogen, surprisingly, does help women to maintain muscle. It's kind of interesting. I didn't realize that till recently. But all of our hormone levels go up when you add muscle to the body. There's been a lot of information about estrogen, you know, storage in the fat of women. But you don't have to have extra fat on your body. If you have muscle on your body, you have extra estrogen as well, and more testosterone, and more progesterone. All of the hormones are raised by lifting weights. So this is a particularly interesting thing for people as they get into middle age and they start to experience menopause and andropause, where their hormones are changing and shifting. Lifting weights and adding muscle kind of resists the changes that people always think, well, has to happen, you know, losing muscle and stuff. Doesn't have to happen. It helps tremendously to lift weights to maintain muscle mass and then maintain your hormones. Another myth that I'd like to dispel is that someone with a well-built body must be knowledgeable about fitness. This is genetics again. Now, that said, you know, I wouldn't hire. I've seen people who are trainers who I wouldn't personally hire because they don't look healthy to me. You know, they don't look like they know how to work their own bodies. You know, their postures are strange, or they don't look embodied, they don't look alive in their bodies. And indeed, you know, for trainers who are really, really big or really well built or something, you also want to look at how does their posture look and how balanced do they look. But the truth is that somebody who doesn't look fabulous may be a fabulous trainer. In many cases, the person who knows the most about training is the one who's had to work the hardest at it. The one who hasn't had an easy time of it, who doesn't have good genetics, they're the ones that really know the most about how to maximize effort with, you know, so that you're not wasting your energy. And these are the people who usually often will know more about injury prevention and things like that. The person who is genetically blessed is not, and who looks the best, is not always the best person to teach. And as we know also, there's a different skill set here. teaching and training requires sensitivity to the person you're working with. A good trainer or a good teacher, a good educator, is someone who is able to perceive the difference between the other person and themselves and is able to see and understand how another person learns, or at least knows how to ask the right questions. And also someone who really, really looks at your structure and how you move, because that's where you have to start from, and again, everyone's real different, real different. We're going to take a musical break in a second. I think I have room for one more. Yeah, I can do one more before we go to a musical break. Another myth is a burn in a muscle means that you're working it in a way that will make it develop. So, you know, they say, work to the burn. A burn, that burn that you feel in your muscle, is an accumulation of lactic acid, which is a byproduct. It's a byproduct of energy metabolism. So it doesn't mean that you're building a muscle. It means that it actually may mean that your muscle's saying stop. It may mean that you're doing too many repetitions when a heavier weight might be better for you. So burn isn't necessarily good. You can get a burn, though. With some exercises, you'll feel a burn and still be getting somewhere. But the burn is not an indication. In general, I think that it's, unless you're exhausted that day or something, I think it is good to go as heavy as you can without your form falling apart so that you're at risk. And as you become a more mature person, your muscles get more mature and everything, you'll find that you can handle slightly heavier weights. That said, that means you're going to rest more in between, and you never work real heavy if you're really trashed, if you're real tired or stressed out. You don't push as hard. You change your effort. But I remember seeing a T-shirt once that said, in the gym, I really liked it, said, go heavy or go home. I really thought that was good. You know what? I'm going to take a 30-second musical break. And when I come back, I'm going to open the phone lines for... No, I'm not. I'm going to share two more short myths. Then I'm going to open up the phone lines. So another few, maybe another 5 minutes or so. This is Health Integration Specialist Lena Berman. I'm doing a solo show called Dispelling the Myths of Weight Resistance Training. I'm going to take a little musical break, and when I come back, I'll finish up with a couple more myths, and then we'll take your phone calls, so hang tight. Welcome back. This is Health Integration Specialist Lena Berman. I actually meant to come back before Chris Isaac started singing, because then we would have had to hear what he was saying, and that would have been another 30-second break. He does play the guitar nicely, though. Okay, Health Integration Specialist Lena Berman on your own health and fitness, and I'm dispelling the myths of weight resistance training. I'm certainly trying to, anyway. And I'm going to go for another few minutes here, 5 or 10 minutes, and then I'll open up the phone lines at 848-4425 in the 510, but that'll be in a few minutes for your questions and comments. Another myth is you can reshape a muscle by doing what we call isolation exercises. This comes from ideas like there are little concentration curls. There's something called a Scott curl too, which is supposed to cause like a peak on a muscle. You know, anyway, the idea is that you can control the shape of a muscle by working it a different way, and some of these things are called isolation exercises, and they sometimes put people in positions that are kind of goofy. I mean, they're not always good. Like sometimes with a bicep curl where you're pushing your elbow forward, it can make you do funny things with your shoulders that may not be so good. And actually, a quote from Larry Scott, who was the person they named the Scott curl for, which is one of those exercises where you push the elbow forward and put it over something. His quote is, you can't limit growth to one area of a muscle. He said it too. So the shape of a muscle is, I'm sorry, again, it's genetic. And when you work a muscle, you're trying to contract as many muscle fibers as possible. And the angle, when you change your angle on that exercise, you may actually degrade the effectiveness of the muscle. The actual contraction, you may make it so that it doesn't contract the whole thing as well. That doesn't mean it changes the shape of it. So, poo-poo to that. That isn't, you know, people get bored doing the same things all the time, and also it is good to change your workout every 6 to 8 weeks if you're doing a weight a little. It doesn't need to change a lot, you can just a little, because it kind of refreshes things a little, and it kind of, people usually say it kind of restarts the body a little, but it also prevents you from getting into kind of overuse injuries if you're just hammering away at yourself doing the same thing. Sometimes just changing the order of the exercises. So I think that's one of the reasons there are so many funny little exercises in odd machines. There are lots of machines out there that are pretty odd too, you know, really, and they're not all very good, you know, they're not all based on very healthy biomechanics or your biomechanics or anybody's biomechanics, but they're meant to keep people from getting really bored. So be careful with those too. Another myth is that professional bodybuilders and other peak performance athletes are healthy. Well, boy, if you ever knew anyone who ever did a contest of any kind, people are usually not in very good shape right before an event. That isn't necessarily true of a peak performance athlete who's running a race or something, because if they've planned they've cycled their training correctly, they should be a little bit rested before they go out on the road or do whatever they're going to do. But boy, professional bodybuilders are usually full of drugs, I'm sorry to say. I mean, there are contests where they're supposed to be natural, and I don't know what to say about all that, because there's a lot of ways to cheat the system. I'm not suggesting that anyone does that, because as far as I'm concerned, if the bill that your body sends you after using performance-enhancing drugs is not worth it to me. I always wanted to exercise so I could live longer and healthier and all that, so I wouldn't want to shorten my life by doing that. But the point is that professional bodybuilders have to diet, they have to get rid of all the fluid on their body before, so they're usually dehydrated, and they do very strange things to themselves. So when they're actually standing up on stage and all their muscles are really showing because they've dieted down and they've dehydrated themselves, they're actually about ready to fall over, and some people actually collapse on stage when they're posing. So the last thing I wanted to mention is I wanted to go back to this business of spot reducing an area and just say something about training your abdominal or stomach muscles. A very common mistake that people make is hooking their feet. And sometimes they'll even hook their feet and hang sort of upside down on a decline bench. And they feel like they're getting into their lower abdominal region more. Well, the thing about hooking your feet is that whenever you hook your feet, you're pulling with your hip flexor muscles, which are the muscles that raise and lower your legs when you're walking and running or stairmastering or something. And you may be working your stomach muscle too, because anything that flexes your back and crunches your trunk is going to work your stomach muscles. So any movement where you're crunching forward or bending forward will, in fact, work your abdominal stomach, you know, your wall of the abdominal erectus, the wall of the stomach muscles in the front. But when you hook with your legs, you are also working your hip flexors. And if you work your hip flexors too much or if you strain them, you will get pain in your lower back and you'll get pain in your hips. And you may not know where, you know, pain is like it's the last symptom to appear. You could be doing something for 10 years and then it suddenly starts hurting. And it's the first thing to go away, too. It's a symptom that goes away faster and then may come back. So you can't always gauge, you can't always say, well, I've been hooking my feet and doing my stomach and I've never had a problem, because you may not know, it may be years later that you suddenly get a problem with your hip flexors and they're flared up. Anyway, the bottom line is you're not really isolating your stomach. You're not really doing a good job of working your stomach. So you don't want to hook your feet when you're doing, in fact, you want your legs kind of out of the picture. You can throw them over a bench. You can just bend your knees and, you know, you can look like someone took you out of a chair and then put you on the floor on your back, so your legs are at 90 degrees like that and you just have your ankles curled and you leave your legs there. But, or you can put your feet against a wall or something like that. But you want to get your legs out of the picture. You don't want to be hooking and pulling that way. So I think you guys probably want to call in, and I think I'm running out of things to say, and I think if I start taking phone calls, you'll have some interesting questions. So let's open up the phone lines. This is Health Integration Specialist Lena Berman talking about dispelling the myths of weight resistance training. The phone number to call in if you have questions or comments is 510-848-4425. Again, it's 510-848-4425, and that includes any area code that you're calling from. And remember that we only have three phone lines. So if you're hearing a ringing, it means that you're waiting to be picked up. And remember to, turn your radio down so we don't get feedback. Let's go to Bill in Sebastopol.
Hello, Lena?
Yeah.
Hi, I have a question. I'm 54 years old. I've been working out since 1984. I did learn something today, although I've been pretty much into this. I agree with everything you say. But I have a question. I have an old injury between my shoulders.
Mm-hmm. It's commonplace.
And from the impact, you know, from a injury. And what happens occasionally is the muscle cramps in that area, either on one side or the other. And I work out twice a week, and I do maintenance these days. I'm not trying to build. I've learned of that what my genetic potential is, and I'm, you know, near it, but not real close.
Well, you don't have to be
maxed
out all the time. I mean,
yeah, I'm 10 pounds lighter than I could be, and that's fine with me.
So what's your question now?
But my question is that, like today, I picked up a book, and that muscle spasmed, and I took two Advil right away. But how do I prevent cramping? What do I do to prevent?
Well, you know, since I can't see you and I can't see your posture, and I don't know, I mean, the first thing I suspect is that there may be some weakness in the base of your trapezius, and that you have a tendency to roll forward with your shoulders, which would put that area at risk. So one of the things that comes up for me is, are your shoulders back and down all the time? Because you start crunching ligaments and stuff. And then the other thing is, can you bring your shoulders back and down naturally? Can they fall back and down naturally? Because, you know, is that area in the upper back strong enough? And sometimes when there's an injury, not sometimes, whenever there's an injury, you get some weakening in the muscle area. So you do have to find a way to re-strengthen it.
The muscle that's cramping isn't the trapezius.
Okay,
it's
you're talking...
It's one of the little muscles that link the vertebrae in the spine.
Okay, so you're right up against the spina erector, so you're kind of, or it could be your rhomboid, could be that, it's like under your scapula, like deep inside under the scapula.
No, it's right next to the spine, actually.
So it might be your spina erector, it might actually be that.
Yeah, I think it is.
Uh-huh. Well, anyway, the point is that one thing you look at is structure. You look at how your body moves, and then you see if you can't do something with weights that repairs that, you know, so that you actually can change the posture a little bit, take some of the pressure off. And then the next thing you look at is your general tendency toward inflammation. Taking Advil is a bad idea because even though it reduces inflammation, it can cause loss of some of the connective tissue in there.
Oh.
It breaks down connective tissue. So you might want to think about using glucosamine hydrochloride.
Using what?
Glucosamine hydrochloride. Everybody's talking about it now. I'm surprised you haven't heard about it. It's wonderful. You need to start with about 2,000 milligrams a day and then take that for several months until the pain starts to ease up a little bit. What it does is it feeds these areas. It feeds some of the collagen back into that area. It isn't a quick fix, and it doesn't reduce inflammation instantly. It's a long-term fix. But you want to do that to try to see if you can rebuild.
Where can I get that?
At the health food store.
Glucosamine hydrochloride?
Yeah.
Oh.
Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's move on to Lee in Oakland. Lee, are you with us?
Yes.
Can you go ahead?
Okay. I just got the latest Muscle Fitness magazine, and I see a lot of ads for creatine, monohydrate, and whey protein. And I was just wondering if you could talk about those two little and what mm-hmm. they're supposed to do and if they really work.
Muscle and Fiction magazine? Sorry, I'm not fond of the Weider publications. I hope I don't get in trouble for saying that. Actually, I think some of his newer ones are not so bad, but I've never liked Muscle and Fiction. Although I have to confess I haven't read it lately. A creatine is interesting. I've been doing some reading about it because people have been asking me about it. You know, I wouldn't take it myself because my impression is that you have to take... first of all, I'm not trying to do peak performance athletics. Are you? Are you really trying to push the envelope here?
No, just trying to kind of get fit after having a baby.
Yeah, see, I think that's not what it's good for. I think what it's really good for is when you're dealing with someone who is either very catabolic, but not because, in other words, if somebody is losing muscle, it's for building muscle.
Right.
But if somebody is losing muscle because there's something wrong, you want to look at that first. Mm-hmm. You want to address those issues first. Then, if you've got someone who's pretty healthy but tends to be, like I know someone who's really, 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 really tall and they tend to have long, skinny muscles, And so he wants to have bigger muscles, and he's having a hard time because of just the whole gestalt of his body, his genetics. And or you have a peak performance athlete who's really trying to maximize everything and just get the most they possibly can out of their quick bursts, intense bursts of energy. It's not for aerobic stuff. It's mostly for bursts of energy or weightlifting and building muscle. But you have to take a lot of creatine to get a good effect, is my understanding. And there is some question about what it may do to your kidneys. It may not be harmless, is what I'm trying to say. So I don't think that creatine is good for a casual athlete. I think it's good for someone who is maybe really reading up on everything and is trying everything else and then maybe tries this too. That's my opinion, and it could change next week. So that's creatine. Whey protein, in general, protein powders tend to be highly processed and denatured protein and not easily assimilated by most people and may even be harmful in the quality of the protein. So in general, I think you just want to clean up your diet, get rid of the sugar and eat more protein and use really good quality protein. And then address your exercise routine so that you're building in enough rest with the amount of effort you're putting out so that your body can develop.
Okay?
Okay?
All right, thanks.
Thank you. Elaine is next. Is it San Francisco, Elaine?
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh, okay.
Hi, Lena.
Hi.
I have a question. I did work with you at one point, and I'm still working out. I've been working out for about 6 months. I'm one of those females who carries their fat all on my lower body, and I'm wondering, I know you said we can't really spot reduce anything, but is there a way to, if we do have more problems in one area, for instance, working those muscle groups a lot more to assist it in any way?
No, it's, I'm sorry, I wish this was so. You know, in fact, I was looking at one of our free papers in Sonoma County, and they had this little sidebar talking about this book that's coming out about typing you according to your body type.
Mm-hmm.
And he calls you something like, I think you're a cone because you're wider on the bottom or something,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm an hourglass and other people are rulers. And it actually says things like people like me shouldn't do leg press. I mean, it's so silly. It's just, I'm sorry. I just got so aggravated when I read this. That's just not true. I mean, like I said, people are genetically different. And yes, if you make sure that you're doing a real good effort on your upper body so that you can build your shoulders, so that it gives you the impression of being wider on top, yeah. And probably you would be less interested in building big muscles on your legs than I would, because my legs are, you know, I'd like to have bigger muscles on my legs. You might want to not build big muscles. But it doesn't make a big difference. And you don't work more to get, it's the fat on your body is going to go away based on whether or not you're, you know, you have to not eat sugar. It's the same nonsense, you know. You want to balance your protein and your carbs. You want to make sure that you're exercising enough so that you're burning what you're eating, but not so much that you're not able to build, because you want to build some muscle so you can speed up your metabolism, and you want your legs to have a nice shape to them. They're always going to be bigger than you think they ought to be, you know, until you start to calm down about that and not worry about it. I mean, I, you know, everybody always wants to do something a little different, but you can slightly change the equation by making sure your upper body gets, you know, you put good effort into your upper body workouts and you maximize and you do good power moves on your shoulders and stuff, so you get some size. But no, mostly not. Mostly you just don't. In other words, I guess what I'm saying is you might use slightly less heavy weights on your legs than you would on your upper body.
More reps.
Well, not a lot more, though. You still wouldn't go past 15. You might want to fatigue at 15, but really fatigue by 12 or 15 on your legs, or you're not going to build anything.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe on your shoulders, if you've been working out for a while, maybe you're fatiguing by 8 or 10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The other question having to do with that is a lot of people told me working the same muscle group twice a week.
Yeah, that's good.
That's pretty typical.
Yeah, just give it some time to rest in between.
Right. Okay, thank you so much for a great show.
Sure.
Bye.
Let's move on to Donna in Canoga.
Hi. Thank you for taking the call. I have two questions. One, I'm 68 years old. How do you feel about my doing this, and could you address age generally? And secondly, arthritis. I inherited some terrible stuff. Among them is arthritis,
mm-hmm.
which travels around from here for a while and there for a while. And how do you feel about exercising a joint that previously had been sore or still a little or not?
Okay, good questions. 68 years old, go for it, absolutely. All
good.
Of the research shows that you one of the things that it shows that's really fun is, aside from the thing of, it says, just do it, because even people who were so frail that they had to, like, assist them to get them to do the exercises, and they honestly didn't even know what they were doing, I mean, real frail elderly people, still, their muscles still grew, and their bone mass still improved. So even people who are living in really have to be, you know, very assisted situations improve.
Bone mass can improve?
Yes, absolutely.
I thought you could just stop off.
No, you can build bone. It finally showed that, really? You know, this is something all of us who've been lifting weights for a long time knew about, because it just makes sense. But the more muscle you have on your body, the more bone you have.
Cool.
There's a direct correlation. And if you think about it, it kind of makes sense. I mean, you know.
Support the mass of muscle, yeah.
Yeah, your body kind of responds if you say, not yet, don't stop yet. I mean, if you use your brain, it builds more networks. And if you, you know, it just... I mean, you know, you're not going to look like you did when you were 32, you know, or so, unless you looked, you know, I don't know.
I never looked like I was 32 even when I was 32.
You look 68 at 32. Well, then you can probably look fabulous now, you know.
Yeah.
Arthritis.
Oh, help.
No. Arthritis, the only thing about arthritis is that if you're really inflamed, that's not a good time to work a joint.
Now, if the arthritis has been there, done its thing, it stays a while, then it drifts away, and sometimes leaves the joint a little sore.
Oh, okay.
Do I dare work it or not?
Yeah. No, a little sore is okay. You just want to be prudent. You don't work a joint that's swollen and throbbing. You know, you don't want to add insult to injury. You're another good candidate for glucosamine. It's a fabulous for people with arthritis. It's very important stuff for arthritis. And, I really have not heard anyone say, I took it, it didn't help. Maybe somebody will call today, but everybody I've talked to who's tried it, it makes some difference.
How long has it been around?
Well, it's been around for a while, but it's something that people are talking about more. The hydrochloride is a better form of it for a variety of reasons, but if you can't find it, take the sulfite. But the if you can get the hydrochloride, the glucosamine hydrochloride, and take 2,000 milligrams a day in divided doses, you know, one in the morning, one evening with food, and take it for several months, and then if you feel like you're doing better, you can try to cut back. But if you start to feel pain again, go back to using it. The other thing is using the essential fats, using a combination of, my preference is primrose oil, and using omega-3 fish oils, not cod liver oil, but omega-3 fish oils, and using them in equal amounts, because you always want to keep your ratio of omega-3s and omega-6s balanced. So maybe 2,000 milligrams of each.
Of each?
In capsules.
How can you use it, or you just take it in
it's
capsules?
It's in an oil, yeah, oil in capsules, and I prefer it to the flaxseed oil for some reason. Some people do very well on flax. Just that I've seen remarkable results with people who are achy and having some problems specifically with that kind of immune response with the primrose oil specifically. Also, it's very good for hormonal stuff. And then the fish oils together.
That and glucosamine, there have been no side effects that you know?
No. It's a substance the body makes. When the joints are injured, the body has trouble absorbing the substance, or the person who's getting it may not make very much. There's several books about this out there. Luke Bucci, I've had on my show a couple times, has a couple books. One is, I think, called Healing Arthritis the Natural Way, and it's a Summit publication. But I just have seen people do very well with that regime. And then you want to work with somebody who is used to working with people who have arthritis and who's
prudent. I
can't
find anybody. I've looked and I question, because I know a little something. And if they know less than I do, I'm really not interested in working with them.
That's a good idea.
And,
well, you're in Southern California.
Yeah,
right?
I am.
Well, I would just ask friends and really don't, you know, wait until you find the right. You're in Los Angeles. I mean, in the L.A. area, there's got to be someone. It's just that it'll just probably take you some time.
It's like
but
kissing
be patient.
Frogs.
It's a little bit, yeah, it's like kissing frogs, but it's also a little bit like choosing a therapist or something. So you have
dear.
To wait till you find, yeah, someone that you resonate with.
Would it be of any benefit, or would you be interested if I came up there, or would it have to be an ongoing thing?
Well, why don't you give me a call and we can talk about it? I can't. This is non-commercial radio. And
how do I get a number?
At the end of the show, just have your pencil out and I will give it out. And I will also plumb my brain and see. I actually don't know anyone in your area, but maybe I can. The other thing is, well, call me and we'll just talk about whether
great.
Or not we can figure something out.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Let's see. We've got Ted in Palo Alto.
Hi. I was wondering about, you mentioned earlier when you're working out, should you work your muscles to the point of exhaustion, you said, I thought?
I didn't say exhaustion, I said till the muscle fails.
Okay, and so that means like basically until you can't lift anymore.
Pretty much, although yeah. When you're doing something that's a little risky, the movement's a little, like if you're young enough to be doing squats, well actually older people can do them if they do them lighter, but if you're doing something where your balance is at risk or your joint might be at risk, You're not going to do it until you actually fall down on the floor, but you want to do it till the muscle feels like it's really being pushed. And then
sometimes, like to the point where, you know, your legs will start shaking, you know? Now, is that mean you've gone too far?
No.
Like when you've got back in your car and you try to drive home and you realize you can't step on the...
Well, if you're working out on a regular basis and you're not new to it, that probably won't happen.
Okay. So that's sort
of... So if you're just starting out, that can happen, and you do want to start slowly because your joints and your ligaments will strengthen more slowly than your muscles. So the first couple of weeks on a new program, you want to ease into it. You might only want to do one set of each exercise when you start out the first week, and then go up to two, and then slowly increase your effort. You can also split your workouts up so you're doing little tiny short guys and doing them more often. You know, if you're doing just a 15-minute workout, you could do those every day if they're different muscle groups, you know, something like that. So you have to sort of design this to go with the reality of who you are and where you are.
Yeah.
And also, if you don't feel good or you're under stress, you don't push yourself as hard.
Okay. One last thing. For some reason, I believe I've heard that it's a myth anyway that after you're working out, you shouldn't sit in a hot tub or take a warm bath. Is that true?
The only reason I can think for not doing... No, I can't think of any real reason for not doing that. I think the only real problem is that you would get really tired.
Yeah.
You get very fatigued. The best thing to do right after a hard workout is to cool down for about 5 minutes doing something that doesn't require heavy effort, like getting on a bicycle and just gently riding it like a stationary bike, or walking around for about 5 or 10 minutes afterwards, because then you're getting rid of the extra lactic acid, which is going to interfere with your energy metabolism and make you feel tired. So you want to bring a little oxygen up into yourself by just cooling down.
Okay.
And stretching and stuff.
When would be the best time to stretch then?
After and during. Okay. After and during. During the time that you're exercising, stopping and stretching between sets is really... not only does it feel better and does it readjust the position of your joint if you're doing this accurately, but it will also make your muscles develop more... they'll look better.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Let's get Peter and El Cerrito on.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I got two problems. About 2 years ago and up until about a year ago, I started crashing around and breaking things. I fell down a 30-foot cliff and broke my foot, and someone hit my finger, and I got a hammer finger, and then my knee started paining right after I smashed into a truck on my bicycle.
You know, Peter, I can answer this one without even hearing the end of the question. Could you, just really cool it and try not to kill yourself? I mean, is it possible for you to, re-examine your relationship with... I'm kidding.
Well, like I said, that period ended about a year ago, a little while.
Oh, dear.
But it left me with all these...
Oh.
Each quadrant, you know, my wrist, too. Mm. So I'm wondering what... It sounded like perhaps that the stuff that you recommended...
Yes.
Would that be...
Right. The other thing is that there's a way to use digestive enzymes between meals. Again, the doses is... The dosages of these is in one of these books. It's like in Luke Bucci's book, and I have it written down somewhere, but there's a way to do this. But there's a protocol for using digestive enzymes between meals right after an injury, immediately after.
Uh-huh.
But if these are old injuries, then the glucosamine would be a good idea, and also the fish oils and the primrose oil, too.
Okay, so the digestive enzymes are not happening right now, but...
Not if these are old injuries.
Yeah. Well, they're old at this point. And the second thing is that, I'm taking the Prozac. I didn't want to do it, but they got me to do it, and I'm really having adverse reactions, one of which is that I have very tight muscles, especially the thigh muscle, the top of the thigh muscle connecting the very knee that has been having some problems. If I pound on it, it makes it better. And
God, I wish I felt better about Prozac.
Me too.
You know, I just did a show recently about food allergies and stuff. There's a lot of things that need to be looked at, and thyroid and all kinds of things when people are depressed. I just wish that...
It's OCD. And that's worse because it means I got to take 40 milligrams for two months before I can tell whether the drug is doing anything, and I'm a basket case.
I'm either
full of anxiety or I'm sleepy.
Gee, according to that movie, which I haven't seen yet, you can just cure yourself by falling in love, apparently.
Well,
no, I don't believe it either. Okay, well, all right. I still think that there's a good reason to look at and to rule out all the other things. I mean, you have nothing to lose, but well, except some lab costs. But to make sure your hormones are where they're supposed to be, to make sure the thyroid's where it's supposed to be, to make sure that your diet, you know, that you're not dealing with some food allergies here, just to be sure.
What lab test should I take?
Well, I can't.
Anything?
I can't.
Okay.
Do,
you know? Yeah, no, I got you. But where can I find it out? In Bushy's book, or?
No. You know, there's a book called Dealing with Depression Naturally by Sid Baumel, B-A-U-M-E-L.
B-A-U-M-E-L.
No, B-A-U-M-E-L, yeah.
M-E-L.
Sid Baumel. It's a Keats publication. You probably have to ask your bookstore to order it. And he lists all different kinds of mixtures of things to, and things to order and things to look at. I interviewed him once, too. You can also just send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll send you a tape list and remind me to circle the show, and you can listen to the show. But you might want to order the book. It's a paperback. Whatever you want to, I mean, in other words, just, in, you know, and also maybe get on the Internet and start poking around. Read more.
But that's talking about taking things instead of it.
No, no, it's a combination of things.
But what tests? I mean, Thora,
I can't, you know, it's like, I'd need to talk to you. I can't just, yeah.
No problem. Okay. I just wish there was... Also, I can't read because this thing is so